Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen. COVID numbers have been improving for weeks, but nearly 43% of eligible Americans remain unvaccinated. Mandates are making a difference as many people faced with the choice between inoculation and being unemployed are getting a jab. The FDA and CDC have now approved boosters for all three vaccine brands, Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J. Mixing and matching has been given the green light. Last week, more people got booster shots than first doses. Vaccines for children as young as 5 are expected soon. Parents already protect their kids from diseases like measles and mumps. Will they do the same for COVID-19? Dr. Lena Wen will answer our COVID questions when Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a good weekend. The trends in the coronavirus pandemic continue to head down while misinformation and demagoguery about vaccines continues unabated. The death of General Colin Powell, an immunocompromised 84-year-old man, has illogically and maliciously been appropriated by anti-vaxxers as an argument against being inoculated. Children will soon be eligible to get a jab. Nationally, only 57% of Americans are fully vaccinated, and that number includes those who received the one-dose regimen made by Johnson & Johnson. There is growing evidence now that people who receive the J&J jab should also get another shot. The numbers in Maryland are better than the national average. About 86% of Marylanders have received at least one dose of vaccine so far. Today on Midday, it's the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen, who has advice and answers to your questions about the coronavirus. Dr. Wen is an emergency physician and former Baltimore City Health Commissioner. She teaches at the George Washington University School of Public Health. She's also a columnist for the Washington Post, a medical analyst for CNN, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and the author of Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. Dr. Wen joins us on Skype. Lena, welcome back. Always great to have you.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure to join you.
And listeners, if you have a question or comment for Dr. Wen, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. So, Lena, I'd like to begin with a subject near and dear to your heart because you were one of the folks who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. You've written in the Washington Post that folks who got the J&J vaccine should now plan to get a second shot. It was designed, I guess, initially as a one-and-done vaccine, but the information and the data has evolved. Tell us what's been going on with the data about the J&J vaccine.
Well, I think a lot of people who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine have been feeling increasingly left behind because so many of the recommendations that initially came out affected people who got the Pfizer vaccine or Moderna vaccine, and there are 15 million Americans who got the one-dose J&J vaccine. Many people got the vaccine because they were told that they should get the first vaccine that's available to them. At the time when the vaccines were first authorized, we didn't know about which was going to be the most effective. Now we have increased evidence that the one-dose J&J vaccine is just not as protective as two doses of Pfizer or Moderna. So it's not even a question so much of waning immunity as it is that the one-dose J&J vaccine is just not enough. Many public health experts are thinking that it probably should have been a two-dose vaccine from the start. The good news, though, is we know that a second dose of another vaccine, whether it's the J&J or Pfizer or Moderna, will substantially increase the protection for J&J recipients. And so last week, the FDA and then the CDC officially made this recommendation that everyone who got the one-dose J&J vaccine, regardless of risk factor, regardless of age, once it's been 2 months since their first dose, they really need to get a second dose of another COVID vaccine. Now, I decided to get a second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. I would have been just as happy to get a second dose of Moderna, except that Pfizer was what was more easily available to me at the time. For women under the age of 50, I'm in this category of women in the age of 18 to 49, I would not recommend that they get a second J&J vaccine. And the reason is that the J&J vaccine has been associated with a very rare but very serious blood clotting disorder. That's low platelets combined with severe blood clots often throughout the body. And young women have died because of this. I would not recommend, especially because there are options at this point for women to get a second dose, younger women to get a second dose of the J&J vaccine. I would recommend that women in this category get a second dose, that's the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine.
And the difference between the second vaccine and the booster for Pfizer and Moderna, for people who received those vaccines originally, one of the differences that strikes me is that the Pfizer and the Moderna boosters are now limited to people age 65 or older, or people who are immunocompromised, or people who have work situations that expose them to possible infection. But for the J&J recipients, there's no age limit. You don't have to have any pre-existing, you know, immunocompromising positions, et cetera. You can, if you got the J&J, you are eligible now for a second dose. Is the term booster the proper term to use for the second dose of a J&J vaccine now? I mean, people might get confused about that.
That's an interesting question. And it's purely really an academic answer, as in I would highly recommend, and the CDC and FDA recommend, for individuals who got the one dose J&J vaccine to get a second dose. Now, right now, technically, it's still considered to be a booster dose. And the reason is that the J&J vaccine is still authorized under emergency use as a one-dose vaccine. Over time, they may change that to become a two-dose primary series instead of a one-dose primary series. But at the moment, it technically is considered a booster. Although, to your point, regardless of risk factor, regardless of age, people should be getting the J&J, a second dose of a vaccine following the one-dose J&J vaccine. Now, one thing that I want to clarify for people who got the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, there is a specific category of individuals who really need to go get a booster at this point. They need to get a third dose of either a Pfizer or Moderna. And then there's a much broader group that is eligible, that can get the booster. And I think there's a big difference here between should and can, or should and may. And this is what I mean. Individuals you mentioned who are immunocompromised, who are 65 and above, or who are 50 and above with chronic medical conditions, the CDC is saying that these people should get a booster at this time if they're 6 months past their first two doses. On the other hand, there is a much larger category of people. That's all individuals 18 and older who have a riskier occupation, who are frontline worker, as an example, or who are in riskier living situations, or who have medical issues. They may choose to get a booster in consultation with their physician. So I think there's a fine line here. There's a larger group that really needs to go get a booster, or this very specific group that need to go get a booster. And then there's a much larger group that may choose to get a booster if they so wish. And self-attestation is all that's needed. And so individuals really are able to get this if they really want to get a booster dose.
Dr. Lena Wen is our guest. It's the Midday Health Watch, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And Lena, it won't surprise you that the email and the Twitter sphere has lit up, and we've got some calls that we'll try to get to. Here's a question from Dave in Frederick, who has a question about dosage. He says, today I got a 1/2 dose of Moderna booster 7 months after getting the J&J vaccine. I got my booster at a Washington County Health Department site, and they said that their guidance was to give a half dose of the Moderna vaccine for people who previously received the J&J vaccine. Can I be confident in the protection I'll have with this combination?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And so let me clarify as to what the booster dose is. So the booster dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and of the Pfizer vaccines are exactly the same as the initial dose. So it's there's literally no difference, as in you could if you got the Pfizer two doses and now you're coming to get a Pfizer third dose, it's exactly the same as what you got before. That's what was studied. By the way, the Pfizer dose is 30 micrograms for the full dose, which is what was given, what is given for the first, second, and third dose. Moderna, first and second dose are 100 micrograms. The third dose, the booster dose that was given emergency use by the emergency use by the FDA is 50 micrograms. So that is the half dose compared to the initial full dose. Otherwise, it's exactly the same. It's literally half the amount. So what was drawn into a syringe for the first two doses, now you get half that amount for the booster dose. Again, 50 micrograms, even for this booster dose compared to 30 micrograms for the Pfizer, that's the full dose. Again, this is what was studied. And so I think that, and as a result, this is what was authorized. And therefore, if you got the Pfizer or Moderna and J&J, now you want to get a booster dose that's Moderna, the half dose Moderna vaccine is what you're going to get as the booster dose. Again, that's what was studied and that's what was authorized.
Again, very important. That's what they studied. So they know what the half dose of Moderna in combination, you know, with the other shots is doing. It's simply a matter of that's what they studied, and that's really important. We have an email from Randy who says, I'm about to turn 64, and I got the Pfizer vaccine, but I feel in limbo because I'm too young and therefore ineligible for the booster. Am I protected? And when might those of us under 65 get another shot? To your knowledge, Dr. Nguyen, are they studying that? Are they, you know, actively looking at what it means to give these boosters to people in their 50s or their 40s or even their 30s?
I would highly recommend that the individual who is almost 64 gets the booster at this point. So again, the CDC and FDA are saying that people who are 50 and older, who have a chronic medical condition of some kind, should get a booster. Now, it's possible that the person who is calling in is a 63-year-old, extremely healthy individual, but actually we have plenty of data now from Israel that immunity wanes over time, that immunity is waning for people 40 and older. And so I think that there's a very good case to be made that you should be getting a booster at this point. Certainly, if you're 50 and older with a chronic medical illness, certainly if you're 65 and older, which is what the CDC and FDA have said, these are the groups that are high risk. You really should get a booster at this point. But even if you're any adult, 18 and older, if you have a chronic medical issue, if you are concerned about the risk exposures that you're having at home, at work, and so forth, you are eligible to get a booster. You can go and get a booster at this point. And if it's something that you are concerned about, and if the caller is concerned enough to write in with this question, you should go and get a booster at this time. If you have questions, discuss it, of course, with your physician. But I think this is really only a matter of time before all adult Americans are going to be recommended to get a booster.
We have a caller on the line, Barry, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Nguyen.
Hi. I have a very angry 88-year-old dad that refuses to get vaccinated. We are all vaccinated. Is it safe for us to go around him?
That's a good question, Barry. Thank you.
Yeah, Barry, I appreciate the dilemma that you're in. I think many people are in a similar boat where they have a loved one who we're concerned about. It's a bit unclear to me as to who you're worried about, as in, are you worried about all of you as the vaccinated relatives potentially infecting your 88-year-old unvaccinated family member, or the other way around? And what I would say is it depends on the risk exposures that you all have. So, for example, if all the vaccinated individuals, as well as the 88-year-old who is unvaccinated, are generally pretty careful, you're still trying to reduce risk as much as possible, the risk to one another is probably pretty low. But on the other hand, if the 88-year-old who is unvaccinated is going to indoor restaurants and also has high risk exposures in other ways. And if there's somebody in your vaccinated family member group who is, let's say, immunocompromised, then your older unvaccinated relative can pose a risk to the immunocompromised individual who is vaccinated. And so it's a, you know, I think that one way you could try to mitigate the risk is if everybody tries to reduce their risk 3 days before seeing one another. And then if you want to reduce risk even further, everyone can get a rapid test. But it is a very difficult situation to be in, especially because, of course, the 88-year-old is at very high risk for having severe outcomes by just by virtue of age alone.
You have two young children under the age of five, and we'll talk in a minute about vaccines being approved pretty soon, we think, for kids 5 to 11. But I wonder, in your situation with your family, have you made the decision to go back inside to restaurants or go to movie theaters or plays or concerts indoors? These indoor settings, what level of risk do you associate with those, both for you and your husband, as well as you and your kids?
My husband and I are living with a lot of caution because we have two children who are too young to be vaccinated. There is this idea of risk that you and I have talked about a lot, but I think needs to be emphasized, which is of cumulative risk. That risk is additive. We're choosing to send a four-year-old to preschool because it's really important. The preschool has a lot of precautions that they're taking, including indoor masking. We do not want to be taking unnecessary risk. It's not necessary for us to be going to indoor restaurants or plays or theaters. It is, to us, too high risk at this point. However, we are, when it comes to limited friends who are also taking extraordinary measures, who are also vaccinated, we are able to see them indoors. That's what we are deciding to do as a family right now. Circumstances may change, certainly at the point that our kids are able to be vaccinated. That would make things a lot safer. Or if the community transmission level where we live here in Baltimore reduces much more, that may also change our risk calculus as well. But for the time being, we are living with a lot of caution because of our unvaccinated children. If it were just me and my husband, I think we might actually go to indoor restaurants. We certainly would go to museums and to theaters and things that we really enjoyed pre-pandemic. But we're taking a lot of caution now and removing those things that to us are unnecessary risk at this point.
Let's get a quick question from an email, and then we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll have more. But Maria asks, should I expect the mild sore arm response that I had from the first Moderna shot or the whole body response like the second when I get the booster?
Depends on the individual. We know as an aggregate in total, especially with data from Israel, where they have vaccinated with the third shot the majority of their population, it seems that the third dose does not have worse side effects than the first two doses. It's probably more comparable to the second dose, although there are some individuals who had pretty minimal side effects with the third dose compared to the second dose and vice versa. So it depends on the individual. But again, from my standpoint, and I feel very fortunate to have gotten my booster already, I would much rather have a sore arm or even fatigue and whole body weakness than get COVID.
I agree. And for what it's worth, anecdotally, my experience was exactly the same when I got my booster and I had Pfizer as it was when I got the second Pfizer shot. I felt a little tired for about a day and then I was fine. And for what it's worth, my 90-year-old mother called me this morning. She got her Moderna booster yesterday morning, and she felt a little tired yesterday. She took a nap, which she doesn't often do, and she called me just before we went on the air. She said, by the way, I feel great today. Everything's fine. So again, anecdotal, you know, but certainly the risk of COVID has got to be, you know, play into everybody's decision. So maybe your arm's sore for a little bit and maybe you're a little tired, but if it protects against COVID, you want to think about it. Dr. Lena Wen is a columnist for The Washington Post, a medical contributor for CNN, and a public health scholar at George Washington University, as well as a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Her new book is called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for public health. Coming up on the other side of a quick break, we will continue the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Wen. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR News Station, 88.1 WIPR.
Hi, I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Hala Vince.
In the coming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll be sharing 5 advantages of health savings accounts and also some key findings from a new report on the rapidly evolving workplace. You can find the Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life podcast on WIPR's website and mobile app, wherever you get your podcasts, and at transamericainstitute.org.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the show, my guest will be Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr. We'll talk about the latest news from the state's third largest jurisdiction. Plus, I'll speak with Dr. James Carmel. He's the director of the Harford Civil Rights Project, a mobile exhibition and an app that explores the African-American civil rights movement in Harford County in the 20th century. So that's all coming up tomorrow here on Midday. If you've just joined us today, my guest is our good friend, Dr. Lena Wen. She's an emergency physician and visiting professor at George Washington University. She's also a former health commissioner of the city of Baltimore and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She's a commentator for CNN and a columnist for the Washington Post. Her latest book is terrific. It's called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. I recommend it highly. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. I want to talk to you, Lena, about the situation that arose after the death of General Colin Powell, first African-American Secretary of State and a groundbreaker in so many other ways. But his death was, to a certain extent, appropriated by people who are anti-vaccines. And they say, here's a man who was vaccinated fully. He had 2 doses, yet he died of COVID-related illness anyway. Therefore, they use that as a justification for saying, see, these vaccines don't work. They're not worth it. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, it was so disappointing to hear, as you said, this the anti-vaccine activists latch on to this narrative after the tragic death of a national hero. So I think there are 2 things to be said about this. One is, I think it's important to point out that General Powell was 84 years old. He also had at least 1 very significant medical condition that made him extremely vulnerable. He had multiple myeloma, which is a blood cancer. It affects the plasma cells that directly are involved in the production of antibodies. So multiple myeloma itself predisposes someone to severe infection. Also, the treatment for multiple myeloma includes chemotherapy or bone marrow transplants or steroids and other things that also makes one extremely likely to not mount a sufficient immune response to the vaccines. And so the one takeaway lesson from all of this should actually be that there are people in our community who are extremely vulnerable. They are really susceptible to severe illness from COVID-19. It is therefore up to the rest of us to get vaccinated. I mean, this is the whole idea of this herd immunity or community immunity, that we, as otherwise generally healthier people, we should be vaccinated in order to protect those among us who need our protection. The second thing I want to point out is that we know, based on the latest CDC data, the CDC now has a COVID tracking tool on their website that looks at this in pretty close to real time. And they found that the current data from that tool are that the individuals who are vaccinated are 6 times less likely to get infected with COVID compared to the unvaccinated. And they are 11 times less likely to die compared to the unvaccinated. That's extremely profound. I mean, nothing is 100%. There's no medical, therapeutic, or any other vaccine that's 100%. But the vaccines protect you extremely well. And so you get vaccinated to protect yourself, but you also get vaccinated to protect other people. That should really be the takeaway from the tragic death of this incredible hero, General Powell.
Absolutely. Well said. Let's go back to the phones. Mindy is on the line in Baltimore. Welcome to the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Nguyen.
Hi, thanks so much for taking the call. A couple things. One, I'm really disappointed that all the medical professionals are talking about vaccines. However, nobody, and I do mean nobody, is talking about what we need to do to stay healthy, such as our diet, exercise, drinking enough water, de-stressing, that whole bit. And then additionally, levels of vitamin D. There's different research now that shows that higher levels of vitamin D are more protective against COVID. And also, if you get COVID, if you've got the lower vitamin D levels, or sorry, the higher vitamin D levels, you have less likelihood of severe COVID. And, you know, and I'm going to be really blunt here. And Dr. Nguyen, I've actually written to you several times and haven't had any response. Nobody is talking on an everyday basis about what we need to do. Did you get out and exercise? Did you breathe fresh air? Did you have an apple or an orange? Did you remember to give your kids something healthy instead of the garbage food that they're eating?
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Mindy. And Dr. Nguyen, you can do all of those things that the caller mentions and still get COVID-19, can't you?
Yes. Although, I mean, I do want to respond to Mindy and say that you're right that we in general should be talking a lot more about what it means to be healthy. I completely agree with you that, I mean, this, and in fact, you've just stated the core principle of public health, that the air that we breathe, the food that we have access to, the exercise that we do, all of that is crucial to improving our overall health and well-being. It's important to our mental health and emotional well-being, as well as to our physical health. We also know that long-term, for example, that underlying medical conditions like having obesity or hypertension and diabetes and heart disease, those things predispose to severe outcomes from COVID-19. And of course, eating healthier and exercising, et cetera, will reduce your likelihood of having these chronic medical illnesses. And in the long term, they are protective when it comes to COVID. The problem, though, is that short term, it's not particularly going to protect you. And the vaccine is our best shot. I mean, long term, yes, we should emphasize healthy foods and exercise and all these things that you talked about. But right now, if somebody already has diabetes and hypertension, or even if they don't, even if they are a generally healthy person, to your point, Tom, they could definitely still get COVID, they could become severely ill from COVID, and they could die. And the best protection, this is the reason why we in public health and medicine keep on emphasizing the importance of vaccination, it's that the vaccines are our best shot in protecting us from severe outcomes. Now, vitamins, again, not something that will hurt, but there is no consistent evidence. There is an association, not causation, with vitamin D or other vitamins with COVID. And even those results are quite mixed. And actually, there have been quite a few studies that have looked at COVID-19 and vitamin D levels. I would say in general, not a bad thing to eat a healthy diet, of course, and to get your vitamin supplements. But that is not the answer to protecting against COVID. Vaccines are.
Yeah, and there was a piece in the New York Times about the wellness community, and a lot of people in the, what's called the wellness community are behind some of the anti-vax misinformation that is out there. I mean, what strikes me about Mindy's call, and I agree with you completely, Lena, that she makes a great point that we should all be living, in ways that are healthy in general. But what concerns me, and I'm not saying that Mindy stated this outright, but a lot of people that I have talked to who are opposed to vaccination say that they're opposed because they have what they call natural immunity, because they are so healthy and they eat the right foods and they exercise and they take care of themselves. They are under the impression that they are somehow sufficiently inoculated against this highly transmissible and potentially deadly disease. And I want to make it clear that that's not the case. There's no evidence that says that you can do things on your own without a vaccine, or perhaps at the very least without having had the disease, to build up immunity to COVID-19. Am I right about that?
That's right. And I think you've stated this extremely well, Tom, that I and other medical folks, we have no objection, of course, to people living a healthy lifestyle. That's fantastic. The problem is if these same individuals are saying you should do that instead of getting vaccinated. That's really not the way this works. I mean, we don't say that about any other vaccine. We don't say, hey, you live a healthy lifestyle and therefore you don't need a vaccine against chickenpox and measles and mumps and rubella. I mean, we don't say that. We also have to remember that it's not just about ourselves. Yes, statistically, chances are a young, healthy person might do just fine if they get COVID and not end up hospitalized. Although we also know that there is quite a substantial chance for that person to have long-term symptoms from COVID-19, many of which we don't even quite fully understand, including ongoing brain fog or shortness of breath and hair loss and other things that happen routinely in young, healthy people who get COVID. But also it's about other people around you as well. And I'm sure that none of us want to be in a position where we infect somebody else that we're in contact with. But I think it's a reminder. You know, I was on CNN earlier this week when John King, who I think many people know from the Magic Wall and the election results, but he disclosed that he has multiple sclerosis, which is a chronic illness that makes people immunosuppressed. He looks extremely healthy. People wouldn't have known that he has MS. And I think the point of him disclosing this, and I found this to be so touching, because his disclosure is... It points out that you don't know who is around you and what they may have. Your colleague at work, who you think you may know really well, you don't know if they have an underlying medical illness. You don't know if they have a child at home who is on chemotherapy. You don't know if they have an elderly parent who might have a kidney transplant. I mean, isn't it our obligation to protect those people around us too?
Absolutely. And you're exactly right. I happened to be watching CNN when Mr. King disclosed his he's been living with MS for 12 years now. And of course, to see him on the air, you'd never think that he's got a thing wrong with him. It's interesting that he did make that disclosure. I thought it was very powerful. I want to get back to the phones, but first an email. Mix and match has been in the news lately. Evidently, people are saying, you know, it's okay if you got a Pfizer vaccine to begin with, you can get Moderna. Here's a question from Mike in Frederick, who says, I'm 67. I got two Moderna shots in February and March. Does it make sense to get the Pfizer as a booster? Is it more effective to mix and match?
It's a great question. Here's my general guidance around mix and match. And it differs depending on if you got Pfizer or Moderna versus if you got J&J. If you got Pfizer or Moderna, I really don't see the purpose of mixing and matching at this point. We don't have head-to-head data comparing what happens if you got the Pfizer vaccine first, and then you got Moderna, and then you got Johnson & Johnson, and the effectiveness data over time. We don't really have those data. So there's no compelling reason to do it unless there's something very specific. For example, if you had myocarditis to the Pfizer vaccine, maybe you want to switch in that case to Johnson & Johnson that doesn't have the side effect. Or if you have a severe allergy to the Pfizer vaccine, you can switch to Johnson & Johnson. But otherwise, there's no reason to switch to J&J, and Pfizer and Moderna are essentially interchangeable. I don't see the reason to switch from Pfizer to Moderna or vice versa, unless it's out of convenience, as in maybe you live in a nursing home and somebody is coming around with vaccines for the other vaccine, in which case I would say it's just fine to get the other booster, but there's no reason to be switching. Very different if you got a one dose of the J&J vaccine, and now you're given the option of the other three vaccines. Again, if you're a woman under the age of 50, highly recommend that you switch to either Pfizer or Moderna. Those, again, are fairly interchangeable. No reason for one versus the other. If you're somebody who otherwise just is not sure, so you're not a woman 18 to 49, but you're otherwise not certain, I would say you can talk to your doctor. I personally think that having a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine is just fine as an option. There are some preliminary data that suggest that having a Pfizer or Moderna vaccine following a J&J vaccine can give you a higher antibody response. But that said, especially if you're a male under the age of 30, there is a higher likelihood of myocarditis with the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, and you would have to weigh the risks and benefits accordingly.
Let's get one more call in before we take a break. Let's go to Vanessa. She's been very patient on the line in Baltimore. Vanessa, welcome to the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Nguyen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a five-year-old who is currently recovering from COVID-19, and thankfully a mild dose. And once the vaccine is approved for that age group, would you recommend waiting a few months before getting him vaccinated, or should I get that for him right away?
I'm not sure I heard the first part of the question about what the condition is.
She has a five-year-old son who is recovering from what she's described as a mild case of COVID. And the question arises, and this is a question we used to get a lot about adults as well. If you've had COVID, do you need to wait a certain interval before you get vaccinated? So she's asking this about her five-year-old son, because it's expected very soon that the vaccines will be available for 5 to 11-year-olds. Does she need to wait before getting him vaccinated now that he's recovering from COVID?
Yeah, so in the case of adults who have had COVID, we know that they have a level of immune protection, but we don't know how long that lasts and how well it lasts. And so it is recommended that they still get vaccinated. That would increase their immune protection. They can do so as soon as their symptoms subside. So they can do that as early, for example, as 2 weeks after their infection, although they probably have pretty good protection for a little bit. And so waiting a month or two once they've been infected would be okay for adults. We do not know that for children. And so I would not be able to answer this. We're still, again, waiting for the FDA meeting that's going to be tomorrow, in fact, to look at the authorization for children 5 to 11 years old. And we do not have the authorization yet for this group. And so I would not be able to answer this question.
Yeah, we should have more information about this in, the next week or so. Former Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Nguyen is our guest. She's an emergency physician, a columnist for The Washington Post, a commentator on CNN. Her most recent book is called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. We'll have more of the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Nguyen on the other side of a short break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at Midday, WIPR. But before we go to our break here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City. We also post their names on the Midday webpage, and we do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 274 people have been victims of homicide in Baltimore City. Baltimore police have released the identities of two people reported as homicide victims in the week before last. They are Tayshaun David, age 22, and Alan Parker. He was 36 years old. Whitney Purnell was shot earlier this month. She died from her injuries last week. Her death has been ruled a homicide. Whitney Purnell was 33 years old. Two people lost their lives to violence in our city last week. They are Dujon Murray, age 33, and Ronald Morgan Jr. He was 45 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen. Her latest book is called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. It is a terrific memoir and an important treatise on what public health can and should look like in the United States. Dr. Wen is a former health commissioner of Baltimore. She's a scholar at George Washington University and the Brookings Institution. She also writes a column for the Washington Post, and she's a medical analyst and commentator on CNN. And we are honored that she is a monthly guest here for the Midday Health Watch on our program. To join us, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWIPR. And Lena, I'd like to go to Matthew, who's on the line from Rockville, who I understand is in studying public health. So Matthew, first bit of advice for me is to read Dr. Wen's book. But what is your question for Dr. Wen?
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm 26 years old, and I just graduated from University of Maryland. And I was wondering if you had any advice to combat vaccine hesitation for, you know, young and growing public health scientists to really get past this vaccine hesitation and the pandemic.
Well, Matthew, your work and studies now are more important than ever. I think people have seen public health in a way that they did not before. And I certainly want to commend you for being in this field. You're also right that vaccine hesitancy is a major problem. And I would say it's not just vaccine hesitancy that's the problem. I mean, there are a lot of people who have questions and concerns about vaccines, which is understandable. And it's our job as healthcare professionals and public health officials to answer their questions. What I'm particularly concerned about is misinformation and often disinformation and deliberate disinformation around vaccines, which the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Vivek Murthy, has called that level of vaccine misinformation, disinformation to be a public health crisis, because it's actually taking away freedom. It's taken away the ability of individuals to make the best choices for themselves and for their families. And so one piece of advice that I would give to everyone is there's a core principle in public health, which is to meet people where they are with the most trusted messengers. Well, we are the most trusted messengers to someone in our lives. Sometimes there's this tendency to think, well, how can we be on TV or social media and spread information? And yes, that's something important to do if that's the platform that you have. But I would also look at the people in your lives. Are there individuals who are close to you who would listen to you? Are there colleagues or a cousin or a neighbor or a childhood friend, someone who may have fallen prey to vaccine misinformation who you could assist? You are the most trusted messenger also to somebody in your life. And I think working on that level to start with is really important for all of us.
Thank you for that call, Matthew, and thank you for getting into this very important field, as Dr. Wen says. So, Lena, we have a couple of questions about foreign travel or travel and length of immunity for some of these vaccines. One person writes, Christopher, who says, I'm planning a trip to Mexico City early next year, so in just a few months. What's the current advice about that? Are there good resources to check on the status of outbreaks in foreign countries? And then David says, I got my two initial shots of Moderna and a booster, but I have a trip in May of next year, which will be 6 months from my booster. And should I anticipate needing another booster for full protection before this trip in more than 6 months?
Well, first of all, I'm very happy to hear that people are traveling. I mean, this is a sign that we are getting back to many aspects of pre-pandemic normal, that we're able to do the things that we enjoy doing, including maybe seeing family and friends in other places and just traveling in general. The CDC has an updated webpage on the risks in different places. And so for the first caller or the first listener who was asking about what resources to go to, that's a good resource. Although I would say that just because somewhere has a lower risk now doesn't mean that it could change. and vice versa, because we know that this is a highly mobile situation, highly fluid situation. So make sure that you continue checking. Also, make sure that you understand what are the requirements of the place that you're going to. They might require a certain amount of quarantine or a pre-departure testing and so forth. And so just know the requirements prior to going. The other thing, too, is look to see what it is that you're going to be doing. Just because somewhere has a very high level of risk doesn't mean that you shouldn't go. Because if what you're going to be doing there, for example, is wearing your mask at all times when indoors and crowded settings, I think that makes it much safer than if you're planning to go all out and not be masking in places. The other question about how long the boosters last, at this point, I would say we don't know. Look, when we look at other types of vaccines, we have the polio vaccine. That's a four-dose series, meaning that once you complete four doses, you're done. Hepatitis, once you complete three doses, you're done. On the other hand, you've got the tetanus vaccine that every 10 years, you have to be re-upped. You have to get another tetanus booster. Or the flu vaccine, you have to get it every year. We don't know in which category the COVID vaccine falls in. Is it possible that we may need another booster in time? Maybe. Is it possible that the booster that you're getting now may last you very well for years? Maybe. And so I don't know that I can answer this question about the safety of traveling in the months to come, except to say that we have to follow the data very carefully. And also, if you're making plans for a trip later next year into 2022, or if you're making a plans for a trip even now for 2021, be ready to change based on the dynamics of the virus on the ground and what we're learning about the vaccines.
Olivia emails, living healthy means having access to healthy foods in your community and a safe environment in which to exercise, which many don't have access to. That's a very good point, Olivia. And Dr. Nguyen talks all about that extensively, about the interconnectedness of so many aspects of our lives when it comes to public health. We have an email, Lena, from Carol in Catonsville, who says, for J&J recipients, is there any advantage in getting the two-dose initial regimen of Pfizer or Moderna instead of the one-shot booster? She says it may not be ethical. However, is it unsafe or ineffective?
Well, I would actually say I don't think it's unethical because we have plenty of vaccine. But I also don't think it's advisable because that is not what has been studied. It just has not been studied. What happens if you get an additional dose? And so what has been studied is getting one dose of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine followed by one dose of Pfizer or Moderna. Again, there's no reason why we should rush out and get more vaccines. We don't do that for anything else. I mean, every season, we don't have people saying, hey, what happens if I get two doses of the flu vaccine instead of one? And so I really would not advise people to be getting some more additional doses other than what the CDC and FDA are recommending.
Let's go to Chris. He's on the line from Bethany Beach in Delaware. Chris, welcome to Midday from the beach.
Thank you so much. Dr. Nguyen, my question is, I'm 84 years old. I was on a prednisone for 8 days for an injury. And the doctor said to wait 2 weeks before I have my booster. Does that sound right with you?
I think it's a reasonable recommendation, and the reason is that prednisone as a steroid does change your immune system. Now, 8 days of prednisone, probably not very much. And so I think it could go either way. I think if you got the booster now, I also don't think that it's going to be a problem. But that said, 2 weeks is not that long. I would say if you're particularly worried, then make sure that you're taking precautions in the meantime, because you don't yet have your booster. Don't engage in higher risk situations. Although I would also add that once you get your booster, remember that this is also not bulletproof armor. This vaccine is a very good vaccine. The booster adds an additional level of protection to a very good vaccine, but it's still not 100% because nothing is 100%. We don't expect that from any of our other medications. No one says, well, a blood pressure medication, it doesn't drop your blood pressure to exactly the same level or to the right amount 100% of the time. And so don't expect that of this vaccine as well. You should still take additional common sense precautions too.
We just have a few minutes left. We'll try to get in a couple more calls and some emails. Sheila is on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Nguyen.
My question is that after the second Moderna shot, a week afterwards, my arm blew up and I developed hives. I have continued to have hives on and off most of the time since February when I got the second shot. Should I get a booster, and if so, which one?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I would say that if you didn't start getting hives until a week after your vaccine, it seems unlikely that it's related to the vaccine. That said, I also think you should consult your doctor about this specific issue. In general, if you suspect that you had an allergic reaction to the initial vaccine, you could consider switching to something else. Johnson & Johnson is a totally different vaccine than Pfizer and Moderna. You could consider switching to that, although based on what you're describing, in particular, if you did not have an allergic reaction to the first vaccine but somehow developed hives to the second one, that does not sound like the reaction is due to the vaccine. And so I would consult your physician for further guidance on why that's occurring.
And I'm afraid that is all the time we have today. Dr. Nguyen, it is always so great to talk to you. You have such great information that's so important. So thank you so much and can't wait till the next time. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Dr. Lena Nguyen, she's the former health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. Her book is called Lifelines, A Doctor's Journey in the Fight for Public Health. She's a columnist at the Washington Post, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, a commentator on CNN, and a great friend of our show. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, conversations with Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr. and Dr. James Carmel, the director of the Harford County Civil Rights Project. Here and Now is up next after news at the top of the hour, and later, for a recap of the day's local news, be sure to download WYPR's podcast, The Daily Dose. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.